Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
That makes 8 GM and head coach moves since December of 2022, making Jimmy Haslam look like a Rooney member.
Well, and the part that stuck out to me on this is that if you know Callahan's record over the previous 2 years, it's the same exact record that Kevin Stefanski has in that time frame as well, as 4-19. And it's obvious just because 3 wins last year, and then we have the same situation this year. No one thought he was good at this.
Yep.
When he got the job, no one thought he was good at this. Yeah. This is the least surprising thing ever.
In fairness, when you give an offensive coordinator who takes credit for Joe Burrow's success the head coaching job, this is how it's supposed to go. In fairness, you can't coach in quicksand, which might be where we are with Kevin Stefanski after the Pittsburgh loss yesterday, which has been described in many ways. I would probably start the conversation with uninspiring, unwatchable, unserious, not fun, and altogether craptastic.
The uninspiring one is the one that really stood out to me there. Offseason, I think you tried making the case this would be the most competitive 3-win team. But for this game, they were not the competitive 3-win part of that. They were very uncompetitive. They were very unserious, as you said. And I think that's the part that bothered me the most. Not only did they seem like they were never going to score, they just seemed like they were lifeless out there. They were dead. There were zombies just walking around on the field. It was awful.
There are one or two ways that you can take that I think our media brethren has taken the Browns 1-5 start. One is I told you so, which we'll get to in a second. The other is revisionist history, which is, I would say, lower than hack if you just can't say I was wrong about anything, right? Like, yeah. You and I feel like we do a good job being like, ooh, missed on that one.
Well, it's hard. I mean, there's so many things we just miss on. Yeah. Like, it's just very easy to be like, hand up our bad.
Occupational hazard, right?
That's what the right way to describe it. Occupational hazard, you're going to miss. It happens.
I even think, though, there's an element of I was wrong in some of the people saying, we knew the Browns were going to be this bad. It's like, no. You knew they had a great chance of being 1-5. That's the part of this that isn't surprising. The surprising part is how undisciplined they are. Mm-hmm. The surprising part is how their age of their core players has shown. The surprising part is how Kevin Stefanski, who heralded, we're going to go back to the wide zone, we're going to go back to my old offense, how just completely inept. We thought it would be a bad offense. We didn't know it was going to be a historically bad offense. They're undisciplined. Mm-hmm. I've heard, this is not a thought that I espouse, I've heard several friends say they're unlikable. I don't know that I agree with that, but I mean, Jerry Jeudy's OPI was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen, especially from somebody who Kevin Stefanski said after the game is one of their leaders. You can't be undisciplined. You can't lack toughness on offense, although that's not a rubber stamp for everybody, and you just cannot be as bad as they are. Yes, we thought they might be 1-5. We didn't know they would be an uncompetitive 1-5, which is mostly what they've been outside of 3 minutes against Green Bay.
Well, and it's the penalties and it's the drops that I'm just at my wit's end with. I mean, maybe this is part of the roster construction problem. When you bring Jerry Jeudy, who always is close to the league lead in drops, and then David Njoku, who 2 years ago, remember he had to put a jug machine in his living room because he was trying to work on not dropping the football as often, and then the drops came up yesterday. You know,
I didn't know it was one of those jugs machines. I thought it was a different jugs machine. That's clearly on me. Yeah. That's on me, dog.
Well, I was always like, is he's not worried about the really expensive like paintings and vases and everything he has in that living room. He just puts a jugs machine right in the living room. What's going on? And like you know Harold Fannin's college game better than I ever will. But like, did he drop a lot of passes at BGSU? Was that a thing with him?
No, because
he's dropping them now.
He had, I don't even remember that, Connor Bazelak throwing him the ball. He was pretty sure handed at BG.
But he's dropping them now, though. That's the difference. And it's like, it's you know, it's funny. I was sitting there. I had Elise's aunt over for dinner yesterday, and we're having pizza. And she was just like, so they had the new quarterback in. And she's like, I was explaining how left-handed quarterbacks aren't a thing in the NFL. Yeah. And then she's like, so does he just not throw a catchable ball? Is that what that is? And I'm like, you know what? It sounds stupid when you say it, but that is a thing. It is a thing with left-handed quarterbacks in particular, but it is a thing just in general in the NFL. And it sounds so simplistic and so easy. Like, does Dylan Gabriel just not throw a catchable ball, but then Joe Flacco wouldn't as well? I'm going to put it more on the drops with these guys.
I just feel like specific to the Browns, I guess we just run the league in terms of uncatchable balls. Like, I feel like every quarterback that ever comes here, we're like, this guy can't throw a catchable ball. I'm like, we just can't find receivers, you know, their head from their ass.
Well, and then, like, Chad O'Shea's been the only constant throughout any of this mess. And the wide receivers coach, he's been here the entire time. Does he just not have him use the jugs machine except when it's their living room? Like, I'm so confused by this.
Browns are going to buy you one of these, but you can't have it in Berea. You have to have it in either finished basement or in your actual living
room. They're so averse to the jugs machine, actually, and Joe could buy his own. Like, he got one on Marketplace, and then he puts it into his living room.
That's a problem. You got it on Temu.
The discounted
one. You got your jugs machine on Temu. You got your quarterback on Temu. I mean, this is a warning sign.
It's just like, what's happening here?
I mean, the Browns are worse than we could have imagined at 1-5. They are. Like, there is a competitive 1-5. I've said I want the most competitive 4-13 team in the NFL. You're not even getting that. And what I think is interesting is trying to navigate these two fixed points. Whether this was the worst loss of the season or just the most recent one, because I think the fact that it was to Pittsburgh and the fact that, again, you got punked. Like, often not defensively, but offensively, you got punked. They slapped you around. Your wide receivers were afraid to go over the middle. Your quarterback wouldn't stop running guys up to get teed off of over the middle. Your head coach is coaching, and I think it's fair to say he's coaching conservatively. Some might maybe say it that he's coaching a little scared right now on offense. Like, all of it comes together. I tend to think this was just the latest loss. I don't know that this was truly the worst loss, but I understand why Browns fans feel like this was the worst loss.
I think the Ravens one might end up being the worst one because that defense just looks so bad now. And the Ravens look so bad right now. And that was, they dog walked you.
Yeah.
Only when the Ravens have this season. And they absolutely destroyed the Browns in that game. And it was at the time, we just kind of looked at it like, well, it's Lamar and it's the Ravens. They're going to be awesome. But they're not. That defense, how do we not score 20 points on that defense, Nick?
I also will say, I know the Lions have dog walked everyone. The Lions made your defense look like the 15th best defense, not top five defense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think maybe that's the point, is in half the games, you've been blown out. And I know that the schedule's tough. Yeah, everybody's got a tough schedule. It's one thing to lose. It's another thing to get blown out. I honestly think, you know, John Harbaugh has shot atop now that Brian Callahan's been fired.
Yeah.
John has kind of shot atop the leaderboard, and I don't think it's the fact they're 1-5. I think, or 1-4, excuse me. I think it's the fact that in their losses, they've gotten way too many blowouts, even if Lamar Jackson wasn't their quarterback the last week or so.
Well, I mean, in that case with the Ravens, it really makes it seem like it's everything that happens is because of Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
That's it.
Which tracks with most of the teams in the NFL, by the way. You lose your franchise quarterback, you're not going to play good football.
Well, at least in Cincinnati, you know, yesterday with Joe Flacco in there, you know, obviously they're not playing good football. You're right about that. But like, so many beat reporters around Cincy were immediately like, this offense looks like it can do something now. They didn't get embarrassed yesterday. You know, I think that's what you're looking for in those situations. Whereas with the Ravens, they've been embarrassed every stretch of the way now.
Would you put this closer to the worst loss of the season or just the most recent?
Yeah, no, I think it's the Ravens game. I think that's the worst loss of the season. But this one is really, this is the one. So last week, it was bubbling under the surface. And I thought it was a real turn on Stefanski last week. And they did nothing to dispel that. In fact, in a game where Dylan Gabriel completed 55% of his passes and should have had about like seven interceptions in that game. He didn't, obviously. They weren't caught. Not catchable football. See where they can't even catch him.
I actually like that.
Works? See how that one works?
Yeah, can't be intercepted if you can't catch the damn ball.
That's right. In a game where he looked, we'll talk about it later exactly how he looked. He was like the 12th biggest problem in that game. I mean, he's so low on my depth chart of problems that the Browns displayed yesterday. Whereas at least in other games, we could look and be like, well, that wasn't great because Joe didn't do his job and we don't have the quarterback to get after it. This was a full team, outside of Andre Schmidt, a full team disaster.
I think what it comes down to me and why I empathize everything that everyone has said about this game and why it stunk so much and the unwatchability, it's bad enough to be awful. Can you just be watchable? And you couldn't. The most watchable thing that happened was Isaiah Bond getting doinked on the helmet because he wasn't looking at the quarterback. Not mad about that.
I actually knew that ball was going to Jamari Thrash. That was my takeaway. I've Zapruder filmed that
is
one.
Is that why Bond was screaming at Thrash?
That's why he was. That's why I'm convinced. Thrash was screaming at Bond.
Okay.
Thrash was screaming at Bond.
I only saw the return fire. I didn't see.
So I went back and watched that because I thought first off, the play was just... It's comical in many ways. And also I was like, I want to find out like what happened in this play. And either it was the worst designed play in NFL history where you would have Bond at the exact time that Thrash was wide open in the end zone, or Bond just didn't do the right thing and cut him off and then doink in the head right as Thrash. If you go look at it, Thrash was open.
Right.
He's sitting there open in the end zone waiting to catch the ball like 10 yards beyond.
We're not looking at this the right way. Isaiah was so excited for his teammate to catch the touchdown, and he was watching Jamari Thrash run that route, and he was thinking to himself, the prettiest route I've seen run today.
I mean, it's
he was just admiring his teammate and what a graceful athlete Jamari Thrash was.
Yeah,
not paying attention.
A real gazelle, that Jamari Thrash. I got lost in his speed.
But no, this comes down to two things for me. This comes down to, on the hand of, it can't possibly be the worst loss of the season. You made two huge trades earlier this week, and we can laugh at them. We can laugh at Flacco being the backup. Those trades matter in a locker room, especially one that has lost consecutive games and knows that their winning days might be numbered, right? And then the second thing was London. So that juxtaposed with Tomlin never blows anyone out. You took a team.
He tried to let you back in.
I'll be honest with you. I watched the Steelers. I went into that game thinking, they're good, they just got to figure it out, to coming away thinking, they're pretty mid. And yet they still blew you out by a significant amount.
Legitimately, for like a quarter and a half, had the thought of, wow, Aaron Rodgers doesn't look anything close to what the Aaron Rodgers I used to think looks like.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, this could be anybody. Just give him with the last name Rodgers on his jersey. It could be just about anybody. And then he picked it up a little bit, but there was nothing special about that.
How about the Metcalf Sherlock touchdown? I mean, you just got to get it there. And what was it? Was it 7 yards short?
It was a lot short.
With DK moving Rogers, back towards the ball, by
Rogers
the way.
Looked up to the heavens as if it was like the wind's fault.
Yeah,
that was a great reaction. Yep. So many people like fake injuries in that moment. He looked up like, oh, gust of wind. Gust of wind got that
act
one.
Of God. Act of God. Of course, Aaron thinks he's God, so it maybe have been an act of Aaron Rodgers as well. 216-474-0092. Was that the worst loss of the season for the Browns, or just the most?
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Recent one, 52 passes. Attempted by Dylan Gabriel, who, all right, I know that this is not a silver lining, but credit where credit is due. There were some guys making business decisions on the Browns yesterday when the hits started piling up. David Njoku was not one of them. He got blasted a couple times. respect to David Njoku. And another one was Dylan Gabriel, who got the ever-loving crap kicked out of him and impressed me. Today and today only, I am not calling him Timu Tua. That was that.
We'll see what happens in a couple hours.
No, the rest of the week, I'm definitely doing it.
Yeah, but today, I think you did in the first segment, didn't you?
I said Timu. I said, you got your quarterback off Timu, but I didn't do Timu Tua.
What other quarterback would that implied?
I don't know. Could have been any of them. We're bound to have 17 this year. But no Timu Tua today, because that was really, if a guy can take that kind of booty kicking, my hat's off. Well done, sir.
I liked it. He looked like he legit threw a punch at one point.
Loved it.
That was kind of fun. I saw somebody earlier today. They were posting high school video of Dylan Gabriel, and it was him just throwing receivers and what is considered hospital balls.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a problem with him.
Yeah.
Big
also,
problem with him.
Man, could they play any more Dylan Gabriel versus Nick Herbig in Hawaiian high school football?
They did a lot. They played a lot into the Hawaiian side of this thing. Yes, they did.
And by the way, didn't hate it. It was interesting.
Didn't find out if his parents, if his dad didn't have a passport for London, this should be the game that he then makes it, because he can fly anywhere inside America. You think that this would have been the game he was there. I didn't see any crowd shots of his parents, though.
You take the Steelers game and you go, you know what? We'll go to the next one.
The lack of support from his parents and his fiance in this, and I didn't check her TikTok. Maybe she was actually there yesterday.
It's true.
It's a little alarming if you're doing Gabriel.
Actually, I think it'd be
not interested.
If she was not there yesterday, that's more alarming.
All right, I'll check it in between the break.
She's not living in Hawaii. She's living here, and it's like you can't take one afternoon
apparently
off.
Sephora gives her just no days off. That's just part of the deal of a new job at Sephora.
Depends if you work in a Kohl's.
It's a two-hour drive.
One way that this has been described by Browns fans, yesterday's loss. And again, the big overarching question is, was this the worst loss of the season or just the most recent? I understand the anger. I understand the vitriol. I think this was just the most recent, even though, man, it's really hard to get defended. It's really hard to defend getting blown out by Mike Tomlin, because it just doesn't happen. Like, it was a 5.5-point line, and you had, I want to say you had more cracks in the red zone than they did. Not great, Bob, just being honest, but this has been described as a Kevin Stefanski loss. And I not that fair matters, because we're all adults here. I just don't know that's entirely fair.
So the way I look at it is, this was the game. So last week was the game that everyone turned on Stefanski. This game didn't help Stefanski, obviously, but I think this is the game. I was too early. Last week I told you all the narratives were going to be, he doesn't have the players, he doesn't have the weapons, he doesn't have the personnel in order to win, and that would be the riding excuse that the Stefanski supporters would be able to make for Kevin Stefanski. And it felt like after this game, that's when that narrative started to really take flight. That's where it really became eyes wide open that this is more than just a coaching problem that the Browns have. This is a talent problem, and it's an everything problem.
I feel like I can parry away, not a Stefanski supporter. As a matter of fact, if you remember, I was furious that they let somebody, my biggest problem with Kevin is I don't think he's a leader of men. I think he's a good schemer. I think he's a great human being. No matter what the guy I think caught one pass in the preseason for the Vikings 5 years ago said about him on social media, wild.
Yeah.
Jeff Bidet? Badgett? I don't know. Never heard
bidet.
Of him.
I want a bidet in my house.
But, his nuggets?
Have a bidet, young man.
They're very cheap, and everyone that gets them loves them. I want one.
But a bidet?
Yeah.
Why?
Everyone that has one swears that everyone that uses toilet paper are basically cavemen.
Okay.
It's good, like five-star reviews from everyone that's had them. I've yet to meet a person that has bought a bidet, put one in their house, and said, bad decision. Now, maybe they're justifying the bidet. I'm not sure. But I've yet to meet that person.
I've never met somebody who has a bidet that's relatable. And I'm going to leave it right there.
They're like 30. That's like $30 on eBay. Or, sorry, on Amazon.
It feels like a highfalutin thing to do.
It's an attachment now at this point. It's like $30 and just a quick attachment that you and anybody, myself, we can all just install easily. I'm surprised I haven't at this point.
I think
about it way too much.
I think
to not
I'm more in on Jeff Badgett or Jeff Bidet than I am actual bidets. But getting back to bidet, vanilla offense. I can parry away and be like, yeah, he's starting a third round rookie behind a bad offensive line. And look at who his receivers are, right? Like the fact that they did look undisciplined, this, that, and the other. Well, they've looked undisciplined, this, that, and the other for 5.5 years, and nobody's cared until this point. As a matter of fact, the media, the greater media who's defended Kevin, has kind of, anytime you mention the penalties, it's like, well, you can't work on everything. But like today, the one thing I've made my case that I'm not the biggest Kevin Stefanski defender. I don't put too much of that on him yesterday. I put a lot of what you saw yesterday on Andrew Berry, who, and I started making this point last week because I was hearing people go in on Kevin Stefanski, and I'm like, what about the clown who made, that was too heavy-handed. I'll take that back. Right. No, because I'll be honest with you. Andrew's the progenitor of Deshaun Watson. Andrew made the biggest mistake in the world that every GM does, which is, I didn't draft this guy in Baker Mayfield, so I don't feel beholden to him, and now I have a reason to move off him. And at the first moment he did, for a guy that was had incredibly problematic accusations and lawsuits off the field, who then stunk it up on the field. And then beyond that, because he made that huge trade, they didn't have enough assets to go pour into the offensive line or the wide receiver room. And yes, he drafted he drafted four nice football players this year. What about all the other things? What about Jed Wills? What about Greg Newsom? What about countless wide receivers that can't catch or get open? What about countless offensive linemen who can't block?
That's the problem. So here's where I want to look at this, though, because I want your viewpoint on this, because you've told everyone before the season that it was going to be a 3-win, 4-win season, right?
Hey, 3-win Wilson here, baby.
3-win Wilson's there. He's live. He's cooking. He's everything in between. But then, like, if the job of Stefanski was to basically make this a quick one-year rebuild and basically pull off what you were describing the entire time, I can make an argument in the eyes of the person that matters in this discussion, in Haslam, he is doing his job in many respects. Like, if they're approaching this year as the poison pill year, then he didn't have to think about the offensive line. He didn't have to think about the wide receivers. He didn't have to think about any of these things. He just had to find a way to get 3 or 4 wins while building the team for next year and beyond.
Are you talking about Stefanski or Berry?
Talking about Berry.
Okay. I think the only thing is, again, that sounds like something I do think that Jimmy might think of, or that the Haslams in general might think of.
See how easy it is to give him, in the eyes of the person that matters the most, not a Peterlin pass, but the idea of, oh, you're doing this the way that we told you to.
If we focus just on this year and the plan for this year, yes, except for the fact they're not competitive. And I do think they're not competitive, in part because you basically said, hey, Kevin, go back to the things that you had success with early in the year or early in your time here, and then didn't give him the pieces to have success with that.
I mean, this screams like the team that you were telling us we were going to have all offseason. And again, you said competitive 3-win team, but like more the idea that this screams like a team that is not in line to win anything. And for the people that were trying to push it to 8 or 9 games before the season got underway, they ignored all the rankings of where this wide receiver room was, where this offensive line was, where everything was with this roster. Andrew Berry could have done something to address that. I believe he didn't intentionally.
Well, and here's the thing. Because I think people have pointed out you drafted 2 quarterbacks and 2 running backs and no offensive linemen this last year. Totally fair. Well, Luke Whipler, they drafted, has not done a thing yet. Nick Harris was another draft pick. Zach Center.
Yeah.
Jed Wills, of the offensive linemen they have drafted, they have not developed any of them, nor has any of them just stepped into a role.
Say the same thing with wide receivers.
So to me, I think that's where maybe I'm going after Berry today. It's like, it's not even necessarily like if Whipler or Zinter was ready. Well, okay, you could make that move. If you had drafted a developmental tackle and developed them over the last 3 or 4 years when you had, I don't know, the best offensive line coach or second best in America in Bill Callahan, maybe we would have somebody that can step in when Jack Conklin has another ouchie boo-boo.
Yeah, well, so I think that would be, so the discussion we've had there with wide receivers is he took a million different third-round wide receivers year in, year out, I think does apply here, at least for offensive linemen taken after Callahan has been gone, and that is it a drafting problem or is it a development problem?
All I'm hearing now.
We don't know.
All I'm hearing from now are from people who know people that have bidets. Don't do
they
that to me.
They all love them.
My boy Matt is telling me.
Every person that has one loves
them. That our buddy George has one. I'm not going too far into that because I'm not putting somebody on blast. It's not helping
person. You already said they're not relatable if they have a bidet. You already went there.
So the problem is,
it's a $30 attachment on Amazon. It's available for everybody.
But why?
What do you mean, but why? I haven't, because I haven't met anybody that said it, they don't like that addition to their life.
How many people have you met with a bidet?
We're at like 10 to 15 maybe at this point.
It's not a bad sample size, all things considered.
I'm veering towards the idea that when you meet that many people that say anything for $30 can improve your life just a little bit, it's probably a good gamble. It's worth a try.
216-474-0092.
Can't be a bad bet. At worst, I just take the attachment off. I go back to caveman living.
Was that a Kevin Stefanski loss yesterday? Let's go with Rick in Menor. Was this the worst loss of the season or just the most recent one for the Browns?
Oh, no, this was absolutely the worst loss of the season. I mean, they should have gone in there and at least been competitive. You know, one of the things that I've noticed about Stefanski, first of all, let me get back to what you were saying about the linemen that were drafted. They're guards and centers. Our problem is with the tackle position. Mm-hmm. We have no tackles, and they're refusing to even attempt to move these guys over to the tackle position to see what they can do. Zinter would have probably been a first-round draft pick if it hadn't been for his injury. The other thing that I want to discuss is this is year six of the Stefanski and Andrew Miller regime.
Andrew Berry.
But the reason that Baker Mayfield is gone is because Stefanski couldn't work with him. And it looks like he's going to be the league MVP this year.
Rick, we appreciate you, buddy. Thank you so much. Hang in there.
I'm picturing Andrew Miller making decisions. He comes in and just throws a fastball at the table. So this is what we're doing now.
It will work. I think Andrew Miller might have been able to find and develop a left tackle or right tackle in 6.5 years.
It would be Mark McGuire in that Simpsons scene. Like, you want to talk about this? Or do you want to see me hit dingers?
Here's where I struggle with. I don't want to do the revisionist history thing because, again, we all take the L on the whole Baker stuff. Now, that being said, Andrew Berry was the guy that came up with the decision. And then I think the reporting is fair to say that Kevin got on board, and I do think Kevin has escaped a lot of blame for that. It's Andrew Berry's decision. Andrew Berry wanted gone with Baker, didn't want to pay Baker. I do think the personality stuff mattered.
At this point, seeing the lack of decisions that Stefanski gets to make anyway, he was probably along for the ride.
216-474-0092.
Some coaches get to say, matters in the personnel and everything like that. Stefanski's not really one of those coaches.
I think he has more of a say than we realize, but it's just when the two biggest decisions come from the GM and it's Baker Mayfield and Deshaun Watson, what other decisions really matter?
Once they took away Alex Van Pelt and it was obvious that Stefanski loved Van Pelt, wanted Van Pelt here, and it just didn't even matter to the guys in the front office about that. It's like, all right, Stefanski's really not making much of a call.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen and Anthony Lima. Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast? You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show. Your way and on your time.
Call here.
So while we're talking about whether yesterday was a Stefanski loss, which I echo the idea that the offense is vanilla, I also wonder if there are very valid reasons why the offense is as plain can be, even if at some point you're hoping for growth and just something. Give me something that says, you know, six games into the season, you've made progress offensively. I also continue to go back to how could you scheme up when this is your offensive line?
That's the hard part.
The whole thing was built on the offensive line going back to who they were when Callahan was here. And even if it wasn't top 10, give me top 15. Well, they're bottom three. It's as bad as you can possibly be, from penalties to silly mistakes to just not blocking guys. Like, I don't know how much I can put on anybody when that's your offensive line.
If I never saw KT Levinson play again, I'd be a pretty happy person. Four different left tackles in six games, six different starting offensive line combinations through six games. It's been a disaster. And by the way, I don't know why anyone thought you could rely on Jack Conklin before the season got underway. Can we just all collectively say you can't rely on Jack Conklin?
Man, that was not a good day for Jack Conklin in the group chat, by the way. Just many of the chats were out on Conklin when he left that game. And
he's just unreliable. He has been for every year he's been with the Browns. He's been that guy, and for some reason they refuse to acknowledge it.
He was also bad yesterday. That was like KT Leviston is one of the worst. We're talking Desmond Harrison bad. And that said, Jack was not that much better than him yesterday. It was a really rough day. Mm-hmm. Whether that's owed to him playing through injury or whatever, it just wasn't. It just wasn't very good on any level. Now that said, it's very rare that you hear an opposing head coach come out and have a criticism of a division opponent, of a team in their conference, just another GM at all. Well, Mike Tomlin today getting ready for his next up. And kind of cycling through what happened this weekend, kind of criticize and try to wrap his head around the Browns trading Joe Flacco in the division.
You know, to be honest, it was shocking to me. Andrew Berry must be a lot smarter than me or us, because it doesn't make sense to me to trade a quarterback that you think enough of to make your opening day starter to a division opponent that's hurting in that area. But that's just my personal feelings.
I really wish that I could just mother bleep Tomlin and be like, you know, stay in your lane. No, he's right. He's right. And listen, I don't want to do the reactionary thing of Joe Flacco was passable in Cincinnati yesterday and they made it sort of a game in Green Bay. I don't want to do that because you and I both said, hey, there's a chance that guy goes to Cincinnati and is a better quarterback because the context is better, even if the O-line isn't better. At the same point, yeah, this is another bit of criticism that is deserved at Andrew Berry and not Kevin Stefanski. We said last week how hard of a job Kevin Stefanski had coming off the London game, but also, hey, one of your team leaders, Joe Flacco, just got traded two to the division within the damn week as well.
All right, so I have a lot of thoughts based off of this, and I just want to see where you take it. First one being the idea that maybe he's just mad that there was an inter-division trade, and he's like, I got to be better than the Bengals whenever Joe Burrow gets healthy, and this makes my life harder, and that's why he's pointing it out. The other thing is the idea that he's just helping out Kevin Stefanski because it's almost like a band of brothers coaching fraternity type thing. And the only flaw I'd have in that is that if you really believe Stefanski was a good coach, you wouldn't go to bat for Kevin Stefanski. You would want him gone. You would want him out of the division. So like, it's a fun sentiment to be like, oh, I'm helping him out because that's what coaches do. Because of course I'm going to make fun of Andrew Berry, the GM, and I'm going to try to save Kevin Stefanski's bacon. Hey, you want to save Kevin Stefanski's bacon because Mike Tomlin has never lost to Kevin Stefanski in Pittsburgh in the regular season. Like, you want to save Kevin Stefanski's bacon because he's 4-19 over his previous 23 games. That's why you might want to save Kevin Stefanski's bacon.
Can I also say maybe it's Mike Tomlin hating analytics as much as he hates anything? Because Mike Tomlin does not seem like a guy that's like, hey, could you give me a dot for this week?
Even the Andrew Berry side of things, though. Shouldn't he be, like, as long as Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski are in Berea and are running the show along with Dee Podesta and everyone else, Tomlin's life is going to be on easy street, is it not?
No, I don't think Tomlin is concerned at any point on anything the Browns do or the Bengals do for that matter.
But if the Ravens did, I think it'd be different. But I think you got to worry about the Bengals because if Joe Burrow gets back and if Joe Flacco actually is able to, I don't know, just win 50% of the games and have you down the stretch. I mean, there's going to be a time where the Steelers faceplant and this division might be 8-9 wins in order to win this thing. Joe Burrow, if Joe Flacco can do his part, they'll be competitive down the stretch there.
I mean, if I'm Mike Tomlin, I've won 187 games, or 188 games in 187 games in damn near 20 years in the job. I've won a Super Bowl. I'm consistently 500 or better. At this point, I think he's just shooting from the hip. I don't think there's any machinations behind it. I think he's just like, yeah, if the team had done that, I might have quit. I think he might just be looking at Kevin Stefanski and be like, man, bub, you got a bad. You're being like within the house.
There's just sympathy there. And that might be the truth. You know, when you're in a job long enough and you have enough power the way that he has and he's comfortable enough within his skin, maybe you can get away with saying something like that. But I did think it was interesting. The immediate, coach taken out for coach type mentality. It's like, well, maybe he's just not threatened by Kevin Stefanski at all. And so he's like, all right, I'll stick up for Stefanski here.
Now, here's where...
Maybe Stefanski will be my offensive coordinator a year from now.
I don't think that was a Kevin Stefanski loss per se. I think that was an organizational loss. I think that loss had been 5+ years in the making, and a lot of it has to do with the crappy decision-making of Andrew Berry. You just can't run from it. And the hell of it is, I think Andrew will survive this. I don't think Kevin will, because that's how the NFL works. And so I think
we also have to figure out was Berry advised to make this year the poison pill year and to basically enter it with all the known problems that we already knew going into it.
Why would you even have to do that? You can just be like, hey, Andrew, go build that great roster that we think you're going to build. You got it, buddy. And then just watch him build one of the rosters that he's built that hadn't worked out well.
Yeah, I guess so. But like, I looked at when Ben Johnson went from the Lions to the Bears, and instantly he looked at the defense and offensive lines and said, okay, I'm going to spend a lot of money there. And he did. He bought, five different pieces between the defensive and offensive line and immediately turned that thing around in many respects for at least those positions. Like, he knew. We weren't breaking news to Andrew Berry that when you made no offseason additions when it came to the offensive line and minimal additions when it came to the wide receiver, that this was going to go this way. He knew.
216-474-0092 was yesterday Kevin Stefanski loss. Let's go with James in Cleveland. Welcome to the show, buddy. What you got for us?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, man.
Oh, man. I'm just, every Monday we got to do better. We got to coach better. He's not doing any better. He has to go. Jim Schwartz has to be the interim head coach. And I don't know. It's sad watching these guys every Sunday not being able to score points.
Yeah, I think to your point there, James, and this gets back to kind of the initial idea of we didn't know they were going to be this bad. Meaning, and thank you for the call, we knew you were going to be 1-5, but we had hoped you'd at least be watchable, right? Like, that was the bar. Competitive, watchable, whatever you want to say. But, like, here's the problem with the Jim Schwartz stuff. If you make Jim Schwartz the interim coach, and then you don't make him the full-time head coach, you're going to lose him. I think one of the most important things to come out of this season...
That's Greg Williams all over again.
I think one of the most important things you have to have coming out of this season is Jim Schwartz as your defensive coordinator long-term. And if in the future somebody hires him a head coach, well, that's a different thing. But, like, I'll be honest with you, I think we're past an interim head coach. I don't think there's a point. I think if they're going to save the season, I think Stefanski, and I can't believe this, I think he deserves the right to be the guy to try and lead that turnaround. I don't think it's going to happen, and you know where that's going to go. But I think given the groceries he was given with the cook, he at least deserves that ability, especially against Miami and then New England. I think it's... Gosh, is that, I can't remember who the third game, maybe that's the Ravens again after that.
It's the Ravens, yeah. I think it's going to look like, because we know Haslam wants to play both Dylan and Shador. If Dylan just struggles, if he struggles and Stefanski refuses to take him out, that's where maybe I could see the change. If not, then I agree with you, he gets the whole way.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.